So welcome, everybody.
Yes, welcome. This is the Two Half Squads, the one and only podcast dedicated 100% to the greatest game in the world.
Advanced Squad Leader.
That's right. I'm Jeff.
I'm Dave.
And we have a very special guest with us, Carl. Welcome, Carl.
Very special guest.
The most specialist guest we've had on all day.
A mover and a mover and a shaker.
Yeah. You know, of all of the special guests we've had on, you are the most recent. I think I can say that. Yeah. So we're glad you could join us. We had a little false start, so we're going to say some things again that probably won't be funny now. But we were just asking Carl where he was, where we were talking to him from. And you said, where in Massachusetts?
New Bedford, Mass. It's down southeastern Massachusetts. If you think of Cape Cod and kind of think of the lower knuckle of that finger extending out into the sea, that's about where New Bedford is. We're about a mile from the ocean.
Okay, nice. Nice. Do you get over there? Is there good seafood?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the lobster up here is fantastic. You got oyster, all that good stuff.
Clam chowder.
Clam chowder, absolutely. Mm. You almost said it right. And, we pack our cards.
Clam chowder.
And, yeah, you don't have degrees up here. And the R's, they kind of just extend like for three or four letters over, But other than that. We do have charge cards, though, just letting them know. Anyway.
And you have, it sounds like, yeah, I hear a little accent there. So you're from that area originally?
Sort of. Bread.
Yeah.
Yep. Born and
But that's not really your claim to fame. You're rather a famous ASL celebrity, which is even bigger than Moby Dick.
I was going to say Marlowe, but I've been playing ASL God for forever. I think squad leader back Purple Box days, actually. I think I was 16 at the time. I'm 62 now, and there's a guy in town, one of the old hands. He's about 26 at the time, real grognard. And try out this game. I've been playing all the zone of control games, Africa Corps, Stalingrad, all that stuff. And they're okay, but they never really quite did it for me. And I tried Panzer Leader once. I said, not so much. And I went over, had squad leader out. He had the God's counterattack out, the very first scenario, And I looked at it, and he was explaining the lines of sight to me and everything. I said, oh, this is great. This is intuitive. I get this. Because my father was a pool hustler. And he actually trained me on pool like a couple hours a day from the time I was 8 to the time I was 13. So I could run two racks of pool by the time I was 13, beat most of his adult friends and all that. So I knew angles. And the guy's, saying, oh, yeah, so you trace the line of sight like this. Oh, I get angles. Cool, So I was pulling all these shots out on the guy, first game I ever played, and he's like, I don't know if we're playing this one with you again. So, well, it's all angles. It makes sense. I was like, pool. So caught on to it, really liked it, and looked back only once when they went all the way through the squad leader series and was waiting for the PTO to come out because that always was a great interest to me. And we got all the way to the end there, right before PTO was supposed to come out and say, hey, guess what? Everything's junk now. Oh, except your boards. You can get to keep your boards. I was like, what? So I walked away in a huff there for about 2 or 3 years. We had a local gaming club, and a couple of guys were playing. And I said, oh, what, they find two rubes? And they said, no, Kyle, you got to try this. It's really good. So I watched a little bit. I got the old bug back, and before you knew it, I was back in. It didn't take long for the hook to get sunk back in, and then that was it. Never really looked back.
We talked to a lot of guys that it seemed like they dropped out for 20 years. They were in it for a while, then they had kids and all that stuff, and they were out of it for 20 years and got back into it. But you were only out for a couple of years, so that's pretty...
I was fortunate. I married a very understanding, supportive wife, she does what interests her, which doesn't interest me in the least. I do what interests me, which doesn't interest her in the least, but we support each other at it. We've been married for 41 years now. And yeah, great wife. And that's really helped. You know, I've never had to worry about, hon, can I please have fun this month? I only had fun 3 months ago. You know, I don't have to worry about that stuff. You know? So that greatly helped. It really did.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Here's one for the wife. We don't we don't ring bells for wives very often, I don't think. Maybe we should start.
Well, you never know. Could lead to increased popularity.
And so you became an ASL hustler then. Is that, did I miss that? Do you hustle rooms now?
Whoops. There we go. That's my ceiling. Like I said, better view. I started playing really initially the first, I'll say, 15 years or so playing ASL. All I really did was I played competitively, you know, either in tournaments or just, you know, online. I got into Basel very early on because most of the guys who are local to me are local in terms of they're an hour away, you know, so it was quite a drive. But around here, it's quite a drive. I mean, the Midwest, I suppose, that's just run down to the convenience store. But out here, that's like forever. You know, you're going over the curvature of the earth if you're driving an hour.
Yeah.
So I got into that from the competitive end of it. And I enjoyed it because of all the layers the game had. You know, I mean, you learn the rules. You still got to learn the tactics. You learn the tactics. You have to learn some of the psychology behind the game. You know, and you're always learning. I mean, even back when I had memory, I couldn't remember at all. You know?
Yeah, that's the memory problem's my problem.
I think for many of us, you know, and I really liked that it was a game that rewarded having an eye for detail. Because you really have to have an eye for detail. If you just kind of go with the electric football attack, it doesn't work. You have to really pay attention to detail. It's little things like, you know, if you're in an urban environment, remember to take snapshots because a two flat's better than a four up three, you know, and things like that. And remember to encircle people every chance you get and, you know, things like that. And if you're not paying attention to detail, what I really liked about the game, you can miss one or two details and it'll cost you the game. It's just that tight a game system. So I really like that about it. And I learned pretty quickly on that, you know, the average ASL player would be an elite player at any other game, really, that you think of. Because of just the man hours it takes to become average at ASL is more than it takes to master most games. So that all appealed to me. And I just love it.
And what it is. What about the dice?
I don't love them all. They don't love me. It's a very love-hate relationship there, you know. And when I do love them, it's always unrequited love. They're all boxcars after the snake eyes. Oh, look, critical hit. Oh, duh. You know, so.
I think I just read a tweet today from an ASLer. I forget who I can credit, but he had said, like, in his game that the dice just laughed and laughed and laughed at him.
Yes, the dice have had a few good laughs at my expense. There is no doubt about it, you know. But at the same time, you would never want to take the dice out of the game because, you know, you have the guard conscript standing there in the fortified building holding off all these elite guys who are just running away, screaming those conscripts are crazy, you know, just running the opposite direction. And on the other side of the coin, you know, you get a little hero who pops up. It's like, oh, well, they're expendable, you know, and he holds a strategic point for you. You know, there's so much narrative, you know.
Yeah, and that's what does make it fun. You taking out the dice, like as I've mentioned before, the games where it's just a matter of I have a five against your two, so I automatically win is excitement. Where's the excitement in the and narrative, as you were saying? Yeah,
absolutely. And of course, and as have been said by many ASLers, it's absolutely true. The guy around the table from you on the other side of the table. It's a big reason we play too. I mean, some of my best friends are ASLers that I met playing games. You know, great guys. Josh Seaman, he used to live in Maine. He's moved out to the West Coast now. But he comes back to Maine every once in a while to visit his mom. He became a very close friend of mine. We went to the first World Series game, the 2013 series up at Fenway, you know, together. You know, he's just back visiting his mom. Hey, Josh, Yeah, I know he's a big Sox fan too, you know. Red Sox. I don't think there's another color. It might, it's not about to white.
Just red.
But yeah, I mean, after the Red Sox get knocked out, it's like baseball, what's that? But and by the second game, I said, you know what? I'm going back home. I'm going to give these tickets to Mike Russo, who's another buddy of mine who's a Yankees fan. At least he'll enjoy the last two games. Sure enough. I mean, but yeah, and that was.
Is he an ASL or Russo or?
No, he's not actually. But he's still a nice guy, that notwithstanding. You know? You got to give people their faults, you know. But yeah, so you met some really great guys.
Yeah.
Jim Taylor.
Midwest. Oh, yeah. I played him, I think, somewhere.
Yeah, very good tournament. Yeah, we give each other a lot of crap because I'm a very aggressive player. He's, on the other hand, he'll kind of sneak up behind your defense from the other side of the earth and come at you from the rear. Very deliberate guy. And but very, very good player. And that's another cool thing about the game is there's no right way to play it per se, you know, to win. You know, you can have your style, the other guy can have his style, and you can both get it done, which is very unique to me in wargaming. Most of the games I've seen, it's like there's one way to win this, and that's it. And it's not really true in ASL. It's a few different ways.
And so are there any other war games you play currently? Or do you
Currently, I'm a one trick. But back in the day, oh, God, yeah. When we had the Southeastern Mass Gamers Club, we played all kinds of stuff. Titles from Equinto. I don't know if that rings a bell from way back in the day. SPI.
SPI.
Babylon Hill titles. Used to play a lot of Civil War games. Richard Berg, may he rest in peace. He came out with Terrible Swift Sword. It's a great game on Gettysburg, regimental skill. So there's a lot of stuff I used to play. Fighting sail games, close action, wooden ships and iron men, stuff like that. But eventually, you know, time got a little constricted as you go on, you know. I just recently retired, but until I turned 62, you know, not too much time in the day, so I'd knock a couple hours off on Vazzle. It wasn't time for any other games.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I see you have won the Yankee ASL Hall of Fame Award. You were the first one to receive that. Are you aware of that?
Oh, yeah. It cost me $50 to buy them off. Now, yeah. Yeah, one day Michael Exenberg, who's a good buddy of mine, ASL player, and he helps me out with the Nor'easter tournament, which we've put on for 27 years now in Massachusetts. The Bunker guys help us too, out in the western part of the state. Those are guys I owe my early ASL tutelage to, you know. Those were the days when I was young and didn't mind driving 2.5 hours to play a game to come back. And my wife used to ask, you gonna drive all that way just to play a game? Turn around, you're gonna be driving as long as you're playing. You don't understand, hon. Yeah. Quality minutes, and there's not so quality minutes. Driving in Massachusetts, not so quality. Playing ASL, high quality. And I played some guys out there. Well, Alan Loisel, somebody nobody's ever heard of, a fantastic player. If Al was ever on the tournament circuit, so to speak, he'd have won many tournaments by now. He taught me. Tom Warren, guys,
Tom,
great designer, great player. Vic, of course, Vic Provost, Ralph McDonald, who's kind of an unsung hero of the New England scene. Great guy. And I love working with Ralph whenever we try to do something, be it the Nor'easter or a design project or whatever, because he's one of these guys. If he can't do it, he'll tell you, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have the time. But if he says, yeah, I've got the time, I'll do it, he does it. There isn't any, you know, boom. When's the deadline? Boom. There you go. Ralph is just Johnny on the spot with as reliable as you come. And a great guy. You know, I remember him and Randy Knight having a alcohol-fueled game of blood and guts at, I think it was Aslan. Yeah. And, oh, they were having a blast, you know. And, I seem to recall one of the pieces getting impaled with a pen, but I don't recall exactly how that happened. Details have been omitted from our tender ears, but
I used to have my pieces in those film canisters. Used to get camera film in, And when I was moving out of my condo, I pulled the couch out and then I lost the SPWs, the half German half tracks. I'm like, what could have happened? We moved the couch out. There was the container. And I suddenly remembered my friend had grabbed it and hurled it at the wall and it fell behind the couch during a game. So those things can happen, but I was very glad to find them all again.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt. So, yeah, the guy around the table's a great part of the game too. And just, you know, another thing I like about the game is when you switch theaters, it feels like you're switching theaters. You play a game in extreme winter, you know, winter war, and then you play something in New Guinea in the jungle. Doesn't feel anything similar. No, I mean, there's similarities. Obviously, it's still the same game, but it doesn't feel that way. The design for effect is great in the game, you know, and that's part of the narrative. Again, it tells stories, and it's really cool. So about 20 years into playing, I was sitting there saying, you know, French Indochina would be a great thing for somebody to do something on. And I sat there for about 5 years waiting for somebody to do something. And finally, it dawned on me, you know, dummy, if you want something done, maybe you ought to get off your duff and do it yourself, you know. So I did. Dave Lamb was the other gentleman who co-designed that. Dien Bien Phu came out through Critical Hit. And, you know, it was a great experience. It was the first time I'd ever really designed anything, you know, other than an individual scenario here or there for Vic for dispatches. And that
game was Vietnam?
It was French Indochina.
Okay.
So, yeah. Their experience in the 50s.
Yes.
From basically 44. And it focused on Dien Bien Phu, the climatic battle in 54. Yeah. And 53 into 54. And it was great. It showed me what a collaborative effort that designs are, you know. And certainly anytime you see anything, I don't care if it's a scenario pack with five scenarios in it. I don't care if it's a huge thing with two CGs and, you know, 30 scenarios in it. It's a collaborative effort. And it's better for it, believe me, you know, because you kind of sit down, you start talking with people about their design ideas, and you give them your thoughts, you know, yeah, I think we could do this way. Hey, wait a minute. How about if we simulate it by taking this rule and kind of taking 90% of that rule and put just a little 10% in new and trying that, you know, and you get into what I call ASL jam sessions. You know, you just kind of sit around. So it's like a musician's jam session, except you're talking ASL. And all these great ideas come out. You put it down on paper. And because you have a collaborative effort, it's so much better than just one guy thinking it up and saying, well, what do you think? You know? And so from Dien Bien Phu, I'd been writing tips articles for a while for Vic at that point. And I moved into more play testing, more design stuff. Tom Warren, who's taught me more about design really than anybody else I know, he kind of tutored me through the two Nor'easter packs that we put out, which were, talk about collaborative effort. Literally every scenario had a different designer, all guys from New England or New York. You know, we let them into the club occasionally. That's if they're, yeah, got to watch those. But, yeah, Mike Puccio, one of the guys that worked with us. Mike's been on the show just recently.
Yeah, and, Mike.
Yeah, great guy, Pooch, as we call him. And, you know, I mean, yeah, geez, all kinds of guys. Now, Ted Wilcox, great guy from Maine. I love to put him and Chris Spell in the same room because the laughter just resonates off the wall. They're both very gregarious guys and with awesome personalities. And God, you'd swear they're watching a sitcom when they're sitting there playing ASL. They're just laughing every 2 seconds. I forget who the guy's name was that was sitting next to one of the Nor'easters, but it's kind of one of the more serious players. It's kind of like, I'm like, get used to it. New England, we don't take it that serious here. Sorry. And, just a whole bunch of different guys. Got Brian Sullivan. We call him Dr. Death. He's a chiropractor, so we give him crap about that. We call him Dr. Death. originally from the city down in New York, but he moved up to the Boston area some time ago. Has a couple of chiropractor offices up here. He can't remember all the different guys. Ralph had a scenario in there. Tom, I had one in there. It was 13 scenarios, the first pack, and it was 13 different guys. Wow, the second pack, I think 15 scenarios, not quite 15 different guys. It was like maybe 12 different guys, but it was great bringing all that together. And Tom and I would have those ASL jam sessions all the time, talking about different scenarios. Oh, he's trying to represent this, but I think it'd be better if we did it this way. Yeah, but if you do that, you know, then you just hunker down the defense over here and you completely lose the game. All right, all right. And then you redesign and come back. All right, you know, we'd have another jam session about, okay, well, this is cool. And it's just fascinating to me to watch that, you know. Mm-hmm. And now, just recently, I started up my own TPP, which is third-party publisher for the newer folks who might be watching, called Yankee ASL. And been working with some really nice guy, got all kinds of projects going on. I just counted them the other day. I think a dozen different projects going at once. So.
Wow.
I cannot at all sympathize or understand, empathize with people who say, I'm retired, I'm bored. Seriously, dude? You're not. I can fix you up in no time.
Yeah.
Bring you back. Come here. You know? So I've got partnered with LFT and also partnering with Broken Ground Design on a couple of them to get the scenario card art, you know, because that's something I have absolutely no skill in. When it comes to graphics, artwork, music, pretty much anything creative outside of ASL, I can't do it. So those guys are supplying their artwork. It looks beautiful, really pops out on the card at you. Gorgeous. Steve Swan, I've got one of his packs in there. Scenarios, a couple of mini CGs in it. And we discovered, I love it when we discover people, you know, they've been there all along. We just didn't know about them, obviously. But a guy named Michael Barger, who used to be in the military, he now works in a company where he basically works with maps all the time. And he can get maps from all over the world. And to boot, he's kind of a Sherlock Holmes when it comes to investigating historical accounts and whatnot for battles. Wow. He's like a battle type. And he's supplied us some artwork, you know, map work that was incredible. And he just basically superimposed a grid over this. I said, oh, yeah, we were doing like one in West Java. Who has a map in West Java? The guys who were fighting in West Java didn't have maps of West Java. You know, it's kind of like just hard in the sand with a stick, and there you go. And he had a 1902 Dutch map. He had a 1941 American map of the area that we had that we're doing the battle on. He blew it up to the right scale, superimposed a grid on it. He said, well, how's that? Yeah, it's good, Mike. Crap. Yeah, it's real good. Thank you. Yeah, that'll do. Yeah. And we passed it off to Al Canamore, who is the main map maker these days over with the Vazel guys. And I said, Al, you know, do you think you might want to get involved in this particular, you know, project we got going? Got a couple of maps. Would you mind? No, I don't mind at all, you know, and all the guys who collaborate. If you're doing anything beyond just playtesting a couple of scenarios, I try to cut people in evenly, you know. I got my role. I'm developing it, playtesting it, and publishing it. You got this role. You're the layout guy. That's important. You're the map guy. Mike's role, the research guy. Steve, the scenario designer. Everybody gets an even cut, which is the only way I can see to do it.
Especially
okay, you know, yeah, so I'm not letting initial cash flows. Now what about my initial expenses? Oh wait, I didn't have any. All right, fine. Y'all get an even cut. Fine. But you know, it works great, and the collaborative effort, everybody just putting their ideas in, it's something that I would advise any gamer out there to try for themselves. Get involved in the design process, because it gives you a better understanding of the scenarios, where the internal clock in every scenario comes from, things like that, you know.
Sure.
Something a lot of players I watch actually don't quite get, that there's an internal clock in every scenario, and you're after a few turns, you look at it, I'm behind a turn. I'm ahead of turn. I'm right where I should be, you know, and that gets built in the design. The whole concept that when you see something in an SSR and you say, oh, that's odd. You don't see that too often. That's the designer telling you something.
Yeah, that's true.
You'll have a chance to use this.
Use it.
Don't just blow it off. Well, that looks like it might be a little difficult. Eh, never mind. No, it's there for a reason. You know, they put it there for a reason. So really cool process. And I love it. You know, it's given me a lot of enjoyment over the years. You know?
Now, how soon would you have the first product available to sale?
Our first product is going to be available in January. Wow. It's going to be something that we're, well, it doesn't require any play testing because these are existing scenarios. We're going to be taking 20 of the best scenarios from the bunker, over the dispatches from the bunker over the years, with Vic and Tom's blessing. And we're putting them into a pack, and we're also taking 5 of the better tips articles, in our opinion, and putting those in there as well. And we're going to market that as the best of the bunker. And our whole model is PDF and printable maps. So if you happen to have historical maps in a project, it's printable. We're going to put instructions in there. Go to your local print guy, tell him to use these specs, and you'll get a, you know, 1-inch map, 1-inch hexes, you know.
Okay.
Blind man hexes, use these specs, you know. If you have really good eyesight, use these specs, you know, that type of thing. I don't think those will be top sellers. But at any rate, and by doing it as a PDF model, what I'm really kind of looking at is European folks, the Asian folks, the Asian market, European market. Anybody outside the continental U.S. will have a great advantage because they don't have to pay customs now. They don't have to pay shipping.
Right.
And I don't want to be running 1,000 copies of a game down to the local post office and say, hey, guys, surprise, would you like to take these off my hands? You know, and yeah, they say go and pay for the reason, you know, I don't want to be the poster boy for that. So I'm much too big a target. So I don't want to work with the post office unless I absolutely have to. But,
well, that's a great idea. That's really a great idea because that is that's a sticking point for, I know, for a lot of players around the world.
Getting their hands on something.
And of course, result of that, you won't be doing any counters. There won't be any counters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We won't be introducing any new counters. We will be putting counter dependencies and board dependencies on every package as well. So you know what else you need to own. And I think that helps MMP out too, because hey, guess what? You can't play this on its own. You need these guys.
Yeah.
Here's a map. You don't have their modules. You can't play this.
Yeah, that's great.
So that's the idea. And hopefully
this is that one you just mentioned. That's one of several projects you've got going on in that.
Got a trench project that we're doing in Syria and Madagascar. I've been play testing for that. In fact, one of the scenarios from that's going to be used in the Albany pool, which is coming up at the start of December. So it's great play testing for that. We've already play tested it to death. If I never see it again, I'll be happy, frankly. I play tested it so many times, you know. But it's a very nice little fight. It's a very interesting offbeat campaign, you know. And I've enjoyed reading about it. And of course, all this stuff means you're getting more books, you know, which the wife just loves. You mean books about war? Well, this is a specific campaign. Oh yeah.
Okay, yeah. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. You're an addict. Well, yeah. You know, could be worse. Could be substance.
Yeah. But, yeah.
It was a big war.
It was the big one. The big one for a reason. You know? And so that's what another one of them. We have a deluxe product that's going to be coming out from Ralph McDonald. Oh. We have a 1945 product that Ted Wilcox is working on, all 1945 scenarios. The Madagascar one, we hope to have 2 mini CGs in that. The Steve Swan one, we hope to have 2 mini CGs in that. One in West Java, and another one, which is very different, is set in Paulus in Romania. That's Hungarian against Romanian. The Hungarians actually attacked the Romanians after they switched sides.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The map that Mike was able to get for that, God, I mean, it's like right down to, and because it's Europe, you can do a little Google Earthing a little easier than, say, West Java. And, oh, it's beautiful. It's right down to, okay, this is this church. This is this, you know, like you'd expect, yeah, like on the Barracks map or something. It's like, wow. Yeah. How did you find this, Mike? Oh, I just called this guy I know. You know, it's New England. Everybody's got a guy. You know, I got this guy. Yeah.
Map guy.
I don't want to know where it came from anymore. Just, you know, okay, that's here. Hopefully no one was harmed in the making of this map.
You're doing all this collaboration. Are you doing, do you do Skype meetings where everybody gets together, or how do you keep it all flowing?
Well, it depends. There's a certain amount of compartmentalization, like for the formatting and the proofing. That's myself and Teddy Horan, who's a local gamer, local guy, and he's good with the graphics and the formatting. So the formatting, that's me and Teddy. We get together over Skype, and we'll either proof the old articles, and we have proofers who went through the old articles looking for errors. I don't know if you know Jim Bishop. He's been doing a lot of tips articles himself lately. You know, Jim will send me stuff and other guys, you know, they want to take a look at this, you know, something Klaus gets involved in a lot, you know. Plus, if you're ever on the Facebook forums and you have a question, you kind of put out the Klaus beacon, you know, and he comes by and he gives you the, the answer. Or the Carl flashlight if Klaus isn't around, you know, I try to come by and help. It's not quite as powerful as the Klaus beacon, but oh well, I do my best. You know? Kind of a low budget Klaus beacon, but so we proof each other's stuff, and that's why when you read the article, wow, it looks really great. But if you read the first draft, you'd probably be, oh, wait a minute, there's an error there and there's an error here. And again, collaboration makes it better. And we got that going on. So that guy, it's a gym call, you know, if we do a call. Usually we just do it because it's all proof. We usually just do it by email, but occasionally voice. Steve, Mike, and I got together about the West Java product, going through the timeline and all that and the map. And so, yeah, you call people in on these little Skype meetings, which when my computer is running, say, as opposed to my phone, I do that. Oh, that was great. I got the two. Hello? You know, go on Echo on Skype, you know, to test the microphone. We are not recording a microphone. What? Power surge? Power surge? What are you talking about? So I take it down to Best Buy. You know, hey, guys, want to look at this? Oh, do you have an appointment? Appointment? What, crazy? Oh, yeah, we're double booked all day. So I said, okay, let's try this on the phone. You know, thank God it worked out. But
now you also write the tips for the which publication?
Batches from the Bunker. That's Vix. Yeah, been Vix. Doing this. Got to be 20 years now, anyway. And at first, it was just a back page thing. You know, a few tips like, you know, here's a good thing to know. Like you take a Sherman tank, for instance, and say, you know, the white background means, you know, you can get double hits with it, you know, and you get favorable gun dual modifiers and all that stuff. And it went from that to, hey, Carl, can you write something on concealment? Concealment? Holy crap. Yeah, I can write something on concealment. It's going to look like a legal degree. Are you sure about this? You know? Well, kind of keep it to two or three installments, okay? All right, you know. And then try to pick out the most important stuff. Then you put it in there. So now they're like anything from a one-part article to a three-part article, and sometimes 10 pages, you know, each time. Because there's just so much when you start doing the rules dive. It's not like I know all the stuff off the top of my head. I'll have a preconceived notion. You know, okay, oh, yeah, that rule works this way. Okay. But let's open the book to make sure it works this way. Oh, it doesn't work this way. I missed this comma here, you know. Oh, look, they put an in there, you know. And
yeah,
that changed everything. Ooh, you know. Now, so I'm learning as well as hopefully passing on something to the other people. So it's good for everybody involved. And I got some nice comments about the articles, which is nice. You know, it's always fun, like, if you put a scenario out there and you're walking around, you see somebody playing the scenario. Or Joe Leoci and, God, it was Norm DeLora, two players at Nor'easter one time. I just done that overrun article for the Journal, Journal 8, way back in the day.
Oh, and, that's right.
Joe was playing Norm. And he looks up to me, and I'm looking up at all the games. I'm the tournament director, so I get the question. He looks up at me and says, "Hey, Kyle, is this right? He's going to overrun my broken guys with a Warble win on table 36? Norm smiles at me and says, "Yeah, it was in that article you wrote, huh, Kyle?" I'm like, "Joe, sorry." So that was, I think, Norm's greatest moment in ASL, was he overran a couple of broken squads with a 36 down one that was sitting in a road with a Warble win.
That gets that all that firepower.
All that firepower tripled in half. Oh, God, yeah. Oh. They got firepower to spare. There's nothing left of those guys. They're mailing them home in envelopes. But the cardboard took a beating. But so did Joe. He wasn't pleased. But, it's nice to see that stuff, you know, get used sometimes. Nothing drives you crazier than you put an article out, and like the next day you look at Facebook. Yeah, so how do you do this? No.
Yeah, it's
the dispatches.
I need to go back and, you know, I haven't read all the dispatches. We bought just the whole batch of them when he had them available. Absolutely. But even the Journal stuff, because, yeah, I guess that's where I probably first saw your name, probably, right? And I need to go back and reread all those articles. I sit here gaming with my friends and say, like, you know, I know there's an article on this, like someone did the vehicles, how to take a bounding shot here and then move your tank here. And I'm like, I need that right now. And I can't quite remember what's an effective way to do this. So I love all the things you write like that. I really need that stuff.
Well, thank you.
And Jeff really needs it. Yeah.
Boy, no kidding.
Poor Jeff, under the bus again, huh, man? Yeah. God, I understand
this. That's where I live. I live under there.
Move your zip down there. Well, I understand. Actually, I think those old articles that you were mentioning, there's been some great ones. I mean, like Bring on the Night. That's a classic one. Then most of the important salient points have been, you know, somebody somewhere has written an article on it that was really good. Now to the old Generals, you can get them from you from the trenches in PDF form.
Right.
So all these articles that were so good haven't been lost. And I think for the new guys, that's really great, because that's like a shortcut to getting to the point to understand the game. And that's another great thing about the ASL community, is it's very supportive of the new players. You know, you see a new guy come on Facebook, you know, they'll ask a question and just like, boom, 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 you know, 10 answers right away. And if you're not new, I mean, I asked a question back in Croix de Guerre when Dan and I were doing Donat with Nadir. And he had a scenario that became, I think, the Chasseurs at Wyvert. It was basically the bridge crossing scenario where the Belgians try to get across the bridge with the Germans hot on their heel and then try to blow the bridge. And historically, the Germans had these two armored cars that got up on the bridge. And, you know, talk about a guy you never heard of, but I'm sure in Belgium he's a national hero. This lieutenant hits the plunger, click, nothing happens. Rut-row. So now that his corporal goes running out to, you know, those open top 45 millimeter vehicles that the Belgians have that kind of shoot out the back. Mm. He goes running out to one of those and mans it while this lieutenant goes running out onto the bridge to manually light the fuse to blow the bridge. There's these two armored cars on the bridge shooting at him. Well, first shot from the corporal takes out one of the armored cars, puts a hole in it. Kills, I think, the driver, wounds a couple other guys. Everybody bails out. That one's out of the action. But the other one shot back, unfortunately, killing him. And meanwhile, the lieutenant's still running. Now, he's taking CMG bullets all through his chest. He gets stitched. Dying breath, lights off the bridge. Bridge goes up. The armored cars go up. In September of 1940, the Germans say, hey, wait, we've got an armored car down here in the drink. This can be salvageable. Let's pull it out.
Oh.
There's a picture of this armored car sitting there with the hole noticeable in the front plate. And it's kind of a grainy old black and white. And Dan and I were looking at, you know, I wonder what type of armored car that is. So I put the picture up on Facebook. Hey, guys, just looking for a little help here. You know, we're going to put this in a scenario, but we're not really sure what kind of armored car this is. No word of a lie. Within 5 minutes, 7 replies. Bing, 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 bing. Oh, that's a rad 8. Yeah, you can tell by the bogey wheels, you know, and the zit on the left front plate. Oh, what? You know, what's going on here? You know, and these guys just, and they're all concurring. Oh, yeah, yeah. You can tell by this mark and that mark. They're like, holy crap. And I thought I didn't have a life. Wow, this is pretty impressive. You know? And it's just an incredible community. You know, I mean, so helpful. Yeah. Everybody has each other's back, you know, except when we're all arguing about how many conscripts can dance on the head of a Panzerfaust. But yeah, that not was damn. Yeah, it's a great community.
And it's funny because a few years ago, it's probably been 5 years, you know, there was a lot of talk about the game dying out. And there was all this thought that it was just going to go away. We were the last of the group. And it would, but it doesn't seem to be, that doesn't seem to be the case.
I'd have to agree, at least at this time.
Yeah.
Maybe in 20 more years, you'll see a precipitous drop off. But at this point in time, no, indeed. I mean, board games right before COVID, and this kind of put the kibosh on that, but right before COVID, it was really enjoying a resurgence, just board games in general, to the point where people are opening up board gaming cafes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
A few over here in the States, you know, for people to just gather and play games. I mean, most of that was Euro games and that type of thing, but it was still thought to be something that was just, you know, the internet was going to kill it off. But there's things the internet does, like playing on Vazzle. It's a lot of fun, very efficient. Click one button, all your prep fire counters go away. You know, click another one, all the DMs go away and all that. And you can hear the other guy's voice, bust his chops, he busts yours. You know, all that's great. But there's just something to, you know, being there in person, too. You know, you get all the cross chatter if there's multiple games, you know. Everybody's butting in because you just don't want to just bust the guy's chops in front of you. You're going to bust your friend's chops to the side, too, and vice versa. You know? It just adds to the atmosphere of it. It's a sense of community, you know. And you lose a little bit of that with the internet version because, you know, it's inevitable. So, I understand why people are kind of starting to gravitate back towards the physical contact and putting a face to it, however hideous, you know. And, I get it. You know, I get it. I think for that reason, it'll survive some context, probably for many years longer than we think it will, to the point where it's really thriving and it's worth it to people to put out new product. I don't know. That might have a 20-year or less leash on it. That might only have a 10-year leash on it because we are all getting older. But I mean, people still play Squad Leader. To me, that's like Latin. It's a dead language, but there are still people playing it, you know, and liking it, enjoying it. I just saw online, in fact, some guy saying, hey, I got the Squad Leader, you know, in the mail. And I'm a little disappointed because the box was beat up. I'm like, dude, glad the box didn't disintegrate with age. You know? So,
yeah, for sure.
You're on a while, I think.
So how did the Nor'easter, starting the Nor'easter, you started the Nor'easter, how long ago was that?
7 years ago. We've been doing it for 27 years.
Yeah.
It wasn't itself. Actually, it was a guy, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, Bob Walden, very well known in our area. And Bob was very tech savvy. In fact, he went on to become a millionaire with tech work. He got his own company going, became a multimillionaire, left ASL behind, SOB. Not that I'm at all bitter, a little, and moved to the West Coast, to San Francisco. And actually, he's into compact racing and everything. He really did quite well for himself. But great guy, great personality. And he said, you know, there's so many guys out here in New England, you know, you got all the East Coast Massachusetts guys and the Rhode Island guys, Connecticut guys, and you got the Western Mass guys, the Bunker guys. Should get everybody together to do a tournament. Oh, I think we lost Jeff.
Oh, he'll be back. I hope. It looks like we're still recording.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
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 I just needed to change my girdle.
Oh, hey, you know, I hear you. I hate it when those snap. Yeah. Anyway, Bob, had the know-how back, and this was the outset of the internet. So, well, the rest of us were like, internet? Oh, you can send email, you know, smoke signals, stone knives, that kind of stuff. And he had a grip on it all. He said, all right, I'm telling you, we can do this. So we got a place called the Nor'easter. You know, we got everybody together and organized. And Bob, not too long after that, moved on. I kind of took it over along with Mike Lexenberg, Charlie Hamilton, Ralph McDonald, and, you know, various other people who come in and do the TDing for us. Robert Johnson, who we all called Kedge. Everybody says, what? It's an old nickname he had, I guess, back in the day, and he just kept it. It's like Hedge with a K, Kedge, just went with it. You know? And for some reason, the nickname fits. I can kind of see where it came from. But anyway, all these guys, you know, help out and kind of rotate the tournament director duties. So we all get a chance to play, like, on alternating years. And I'm usually the questions guy with the rules and stuff. You know, people, you know, hey, Kai, get a second. You know, what's up? You know. How many conscripts can dance on the head of a Panzerfaust? Oh, let's look that up. 20. Are you sure? Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
and it's grown to a point where we get about 50 guys a year. It's a nice size regional tournament, you know. And of course, that was pre-COVID. We haven't run it the last couple of years other than on the internet. But even we still get about, you know, 50 guys doing it by Vassal. So I'm kind of the Vassal hand, so I've been handling those last two, you know, pairing everybody up each round and making sure that the games go forward. But it's been great. We've loved it. And, you know, again, it just brings that whole community in the area that much more together. You know, everybody gets a chance to see each other. And it's like, you know, always the usual suspects. Don't ever go to one of these things and say, hey, who's that guy? You know, very rarely. You know, it's usually just like old buds getting together and hanging out, eating great seafood. We're doing it in Fairhaven, Mass. Now, in fact, we have one scheduled for March. It's coming March, I think it's the 4th through the 28th. We've made it into a 4-day event now. So we have open gaming on Thursday, and then we have the actual tournament Friday to Sunday. And the open game is kind of nice because you want to play a bigger scenario that's not tournament sized. You can get that in. You know, in a day. And God, just obscene amount of food in the area. It just really is. You know, you got Mike's down the road, which is like a 5-star restaurant, seafood, surf and turf, whatever you want. Another little place nobody's ever heard of called Gene's Seafood, where they get it literally just fresh off the dock. You can smell it when you walk in. It's like, oh, God. It's just. The New Englanders are like, God, this is fantastic seafood. The guys who come from like the Midwest, like, my God.
Oh, yeah.
How do you guys ever do you look at this? Do you think we do? You know? And fish is protein, but that protein's got to go someplace eventually. You know? So, yeah, I mean, it's nice. And it's a nice little hotel to Hampton Inn. And they've been hurting for business, of course, with COVID. So as soon as I said, look, I think we're going to do it this year. Enough people are vaccinated now. And, you know, we'll be talking to everybody about that. Of course, we prefer that if you're not vaccinated, then at least have you had COVID and have natural immunity to it? Because you got to keep an eye on this stuff.
Yeah.
In the last 2 years. So go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, you said, let's see, you were...
I'm so glad, Jeff, I'm not the only one who...
Oh, my gosh. I had a question.
Well, while you're thinking of that, I can mention...
How did you pick that time of year? Here's a question. How did you pick that time of year? I mean, is that a great time of year to be traveling around New England?
Well, it's late March, mid-March to late March, so it's not bad. Every once in a while, we'll get an Nor'easter, and people still show up. Because it's driving in this type of weather, most of the guys who come.
Okay.
People who are coming from out of the area, they're flying in, and then they're just taking a little rent-a-car from the airport to where we are, which isn't much of a haul, so they're fine. Mainly, we chose that time of year to try to avoid stepping on other people's toes.
Okay.
You know, you take a look and say, okay, when's this big tournament? Okay. Yeah. No, we don't want January. That's Winter Offensive. Okay. When's ASLOC? Duh. That's in October. Okay. No, don't want October. And you look around, see where the other tournaments are, and fit yourself in. And 27 years ago, that was a lot easier to do because there's a lot fewer tournaments and conventions, which is another mark of a healthy hobby. They've grown.
Yeah.
So now we do have a couple that are close to us. There's, I think it's the Bitter Ender down in the Carolinas. That's close to us. That never used to be, but, you know, as different folks come in, you know, what are you going to do? But they're regional tournaments, so at least we're not close to any of the big ones, you know, like ASLOC, that type of thing. But, it's all good. They're all regional anyway, so, yeah, they get their 40.
Do you ever get people? Europe folks?
Got a guy from Finland one time. Who happened to be traveling on business and said, hey, I noticed that my business trip coincided with an ASL tournament. Who knew, you know? And he came up and we've got had Dave Gannat out, Pete Schilling, combining two ASL personalities. Steve Plava, Steve comes out fairly frequently. He's just over in Connecticut, but sometimes he does have other commitments. Paul Sidhu always comes up, Ron Dewinsky. We've had Gary Mai up, a bunch of different guys.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, for a while they were calling it the New Jersey tournament because the New Jersey guys kept coming up and winning, you know, so it's kind of like the New Jersey commemorative tournament.
Well, our time is running out here. We're getting on an hour.
Oh, yes.
An hour. Is what else? Would anything else, Carl, you'd like to share with everybody while we got you here?
Well, on the new TPP, we will be having a website soon. I haven't set one up yet because I want to kind of time it for when the first product comes out. But you'll be hearing from us on that. There's a lot of other things that you could talk about with ASL, to be sure. But I think pretty much that's covered what I got.
Okay. Well,
won't be the last time that we talk to you. You've got a lot of great knowledge, and it's really interesting hearing all this stuff.
Well, a lot of old war stories for sure. You know, it's been a good run.
We like helping to preserve the history of the game, which is always so fascinating to people.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun hobby with a great bunch of guys. And I have no regrets that this is a game I settled into and chose. That's for sure. You know, yeah. I wouldn't have done it any other way. I can't see me having played Stalingrad all this time with this level of enthusiasm, you know. Oh, that's the T3 gambit, you know.
Yeah.
The game is so familiar. It's like playing chess.
All of your contributions have been very much appreciated. And I'm saying that personally, as I mentioned before, just to read the tactical advice and hints is just vastly more helpful to players than us doing a podcast, I think.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. I'm sure of that.
Yeah. Like I say, it's nice to, I wish somebody, well, actually I did have somebody doing it, except that my experience was put your hand on the table. Okay. This is a hammer. Whack. Don't put your hand on the table. You know, or this way's more gentler. It's kinder and gentler instruction. Although the other way does stick with you better.
It can. Yeah.
I have one last question though. When you meet somebody, an adult who doesn't know you.
I was going to say in this.
What do you tell them you do for a hobby?
It never gets mentioned, actually.
Yeah.
I'll leave you with a funny story. Back when I first met my wife, we're dating. And, you know, so I would disappear, you know, for a couple of days at a time, you know. And what is it exactly that you're into? Oh, God. She's gone and asked it, you know. And to set the stage, okay, like I'm 18 years old. My wife was an older woman. She was 23, you know. I was very fortunate. Beautiful girl, and very nice person. And I'm saying, oh boy, I'm not going to do any better than this. Let's not blow it now. do I tell her? I do. So I go into this big, long, intricate explanation of what war games are. So that's what I do. Oh, you play war games. She's smart, too. Damn it.
That's rough, man. Well, give her our best wishes, and thanks again for joining us. We look forward to talking to you, and we very much look forward to seeing the products that come spewing forth from your various.
Spewing is probably a good word for it.
Spewing.
We'll look forward to it. All right, thank you.
Take it easy, Carl.
Take care now.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.